This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 12th of July, 2019. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. And so let's begin with our usual pieces. The first is to say, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please first check the box is plugged into the mains before you telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's Mary Davis's number on 01962 711 988. As you listen to the recording, remember, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And just one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Welcome back, Richard. And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Now, moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Ex-owner quits Molly's Den on day of death. Traders furious over loss of money during collapse. Pub future in doubt. And here's to the first headline story from Claire, please.
Ex-owner quit Molly's Den on day of death. Following the shock news that Molly's Den chain of Vintage Emporia has gone bust, the Chronicle can reveal that the brand's former owner resigned as a company director on the same day he was found with a fatal self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. MD Emporium Limited, the company which owns the Molly's Den brand, had two directors, John East Rigby and his wife Cherry East Rigby. The company's house website shows that Mr. East Rigby had resigned as a director of MD Emporium Limited on May the 8th, 2019, leaving his wife as the sole director. On the same day, Mr. East Rigby, who was 65, described as a serial entrepreneur in his LinkedIn profile, was found dead at his £1.3 million house at Mockbeggar near Ringwood on the edge of the New Forest. An inquest opening in Winchester was told that consultant pathologist Dr. Sanjay Jogai had conducted a post-mortem and said cause of death was traumatic brain injury and a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The previous year, a charge had been taken out on the business by the National Westminster Bank to secure all the company's liabilities to the bank. Last Tuesday, the workers at all three Molly's Den branches in Winchester, Bournemouth and Christchurch were told they no longer had jobs when Liquidators RSM Restructuring Advisory said it had been instructed to assist in placing MD Emporium into liquidation. A buyer is being sought for the Molly's Den brand, but 26 people are understood to have lost their jobs. This week, however, the Bournemouth branch was saved. The premises in a small industrial unit off Francis Road will be renamed The Den and run by partners James Irvin and Megan Noble, who work in the interiors and antiques trade and had their own stand at Molly's Den. The young couple own On the Green Interiors in Ashley Cross. The move means that the Molly's Den stores in Christchurch and Winchester remain closed, although James and Megan are planning their Bournemouth reopening as a separate business next week on July the 18th. The full inquest into Mr. East Rigby's death is due to take place in September.
And following on from that story, we have traders furious over lost money during collapse. Dozens of angry traders have been collecting their items from the Winchester branch of Molly's Den after it collapsed last week. As previously reported, the business, where independent traders rent stalls to sell vintage, retro and antique goods, plunged into liquidation. The owner of the business, John East Rigby, died of a gunshot wound to his head in May at his New Forest home. Stall holders at the Eastern Lane site were given 3 days at the start of the week to remove their things. Trader Mallory Grace was at the Winchester collection on Monday and said she'd been selling at the imps. Molly's Den traders have just paid their July rent, which can be up to £500 a month for the largest pitches, shortly before the collapse. Mallory believes she is owed around £800, which she described as a serious amount of money for small business owners. She said the debts were made up of the rent and money from the previous month's sales. Molly's Den collects the money made by traders at the branch and take a monthly cut of 2.5% before paying it back to them. Mallory said, "I just can't believe they took the rent on the Monday and announced closure the following day. They would have known what was going on well in advance, which is why everyone here is very annoyed. When John died, there was an email sent round asking us to be patient as things were sorted out, which we did with no questions asked. But now this is a kick in the teeth." Mary added, "Thankfully, I don't have all my eggs in one basket and sell a lot of things at Robin's Nest Emporium in Fareham too. But one of the men I spoke to yesterday has to pack in his business completely because of this." Liquidators RSM Restructuring Advisory said it had been instructed to assist with placing MD Emporium, the company which owns the brand, into liquidation.
And now on a different subject, this one is entitled Pub Future in Doubt. Villagers are being given the chance to help a threatened pub. Kim Gottlieb, the owner of the Dove Inn at Mitchell-Devers Station, wants to redevelop the pub for housing and open a new community facility in a coach house on the site. But the pub on Andover Road has been nominated as an asset of community value by Mitchell-Devers Parish Council and agreed by Winchester City Council. The designation means that the third parties have 6 months to organise a bid for the building. First, the City Council must receive an expression of intent to bid by July the 25th to postpone the sale for 6 months. Mitchell-Devers Parish Council Chairman William Helen said, "We would like it to continue as a community facility. If a community group wanted to do something with it, then we would support them. We don't have feedback at the moment as to what the public think. We have to sit on the fence as a supporting organisation and not a directing organisation." Mr. Helen said parishioners had been alerted to the potential loss of the pub in a newsletter. It was too early to say if a public meeting would be held. Councillor Gottlieb, the man who derailed the City Council's first attempt to redevelop the Silver Hill area in 2016, and defected from the Conservatives to the Liberal Democrats, issued a statement. He said, "I put the Dove on the market last summer when the present tenants, Charlie and Joanna Lukowski, told me that they sadly had to leave. Charlie and Joanna are both brilliantly hard-working and have made the very beat of the Dove, but the current setup is really not viable." Councillor Gottlieb, who lives in nearby East Stratton, added, "Apart from the industry-wide difficulties that have seen roughly a quarter of the country's pubs, mostly independent traders, closing down in the last decade, the location is not strong enough to attract sufficient custom from afar, and the 200-year-old building needs substantial investment to put it into a good condition. Because there has been no serious interest received in the last year, I now plan to redevelop the whole site so that the coach house becomes a bar, cafe and public facility while the main house is converted into flats. The coach house is nearly as large as the existing bars and restaurant, but by keeping the offering modest but interesting and of a size that will need to draw only from the local community, we will hopefully create something that is far more sustainable in the long term. The conversion of the main building will help pay for it all and allow us to do additional work, such as installing a new sewage treatment plant. I hope to have a planning application submitted within the next 3 months. If the Dove does close, it will be the first pub closure in the area for several years. Local pubs that have gone include the Bullington Cross, the Saddlers in Sutton Scotney, and the Lunways Inn, north of Kingsworthy.
Thank you all very much for those. And so here are the death notices. Bloomfield, Thomas Edward Tom Bloomfield, former proprietor of Wessex Motor Components, passed away in hospital on the 21st of June.
Hurst, John Malcolm Hurst, passed away peacefully on the 13th of June.
Locke, Pauline Esme Locke, née Docking, passed away peacefully on the 28th of June, surrounded by her family.
Neville, Jean Ellen Neville, peacefully at home on the 1st of July, aged 89.
Westmacott, William Henry Westmacott, died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 28th of June, aged 75 years.
Whitfield, Iris Whitfield, passed away on 27th of June, aged 93 years.
Wilby, George Wilby, formerly of Alsford and cricketer of Tichborne Park Cricket Club, died peacefully at home on the 20th of June, aged 94.
Thank you, everyone. Christian comment next, and Liz Tatham contributes to this week's Christian comment, and it's headed Seeing the Divine Gift. Claire to read, please.
Have you visited the Michelangelo exhibition in the Winchester Discovery Centre yet? Nor have I, but I am going to, as soon as I return from a short break in the north. I shall also cross over the road to the St. Peter's Church Discovery Centre and see a short film about the artistic master as a pivotal player in the history of Christianity, God's history. Even if you are not a believer, you have to admit that Michelangelo's talent has something of the supernatural about it. Many years ago, I went into the Sistine Chapel when it was quiet. How often does that happen? And I was able to lie on a bench and wonder at the ceiling. His detailed and inspiring art is surely the result of a given gift which has been honed and perfected by hard work, trial, and error. That is how he becomes one of God's pivotal players. He used his gift, his calling, for the glory of God, spreading the message, the word, through art. I remember someone once asking me, after she returned from a trip to Florence, why she probably wasn't going to do anything great and amazing. Well, I was the one to be amazed. She was a dedicated and intelligent nurse, a leader in her profession, and now devotes her time in retirement to helping youth offenders. How great is that? I asked her. Most of us mortals will not do things that make us famous, but who wants to be famous these days anyway? It involves too much intrusion and exposure for my liking. What we are asked to do is take and examine our gifts and skills, offer them up to God, and use them now to bring his kingdom closer. I have met people who say they have no gifts to offer, but I do not believe this is so. We are all gifted in many different ways. Hospitality, talking, listening, music, cooking, handiwork, writing, friendship, prayer, organising, the list goes on. We don't have to be famous, but we can be well known or even remembered for the ways that we have made a difference for others. God is in all things, someone said. He is in you, so let him be found where you are. There is great joy to be found in the art, handiwork, singing or cooking of someone you know. They will probably not be found performing on television or their work hung in the National Gallery, but I have a collection of paintings by friends and memories of happy conversations over food with others that I treasure and value as much as lying on the floor in the Sistine Chapel and seeing all that beautiful work of creation. Last night, I listened to someone sing a song, not so well, but her guitar playing was impressive. She then signed another song, very movingly. She wasn't frightened to bring her gifts and offer them to us all, so we could both laugh and be moved. Someone said to me this week that often we are called to do things out of time, and that when we respond to this call, we do not know where or how the impact will be felt. It might be now, later, when the kingdom finally comes. Remember the parable of the talents or the lamps hiding under bushels. What good are they buried and hidden? Bring them out now and be surprised that you too can be pivotal in God's plan. And that was written by Liz Tatham.
Thank you, Claire. Well, letters to the editor next. And with so much going on in the world, it's hardly surprising that the editor's bag is full to brimming again. But we've selected 12 of what we think are the best for you. Richard, will you start us off, please?
I will, with a letter entitled Armageddon from Peter Rees of the Winchester Labour Party. So, within the next few weeks, the most catastrophic sequence of events will come to fruition, and the UK will be plunged into the deepest crisis since World War II. The Conservative Party roadshow will play its final gig. Just 160,000 people, plus the odd double voter, will decide the nation's fate in selecting their next party leader. Will it be Boris, the blathering Exetonian buffoon, or Jeremy, the ex-Charterhouse serial start-up entrepreneur? Both ex-public school, the former cannot remember how many children he has and by who, the latter a rampant privateer of the NHS who cannot remember his wife's nationality. The nation stands on the precipice of disaster as both of these contenders have committed the country to a Brexit within a matter of weeks. Headlonging the country into another prolonged, abysmal economic climate. In recent weeks, we've heard continuously of the personal, not even party political or governmental policy promises that have spewed forth from both candidates in their lust for power. What the nation is suddenly going to get right, what the nation is suddenly going to get to right the wrongs of the past 10 years would put to shame the offers in a Harrod sale. Tries telling nearly 2 million dependents on food banks that their luck is suddenly going to be in, or the supposed recipients of the Universal Credit that their difficulties are over. With either contender, we face the worst of times. Their ludicrous promises are simply calculated hustings, sweeteners and vote-gathering candy. Our future, the future of this proud and hard-working nation, will be sided by an infinitesimal number of members of the Tory party choosing the lesser of two evils to lead us into more economic disaster. At least the Labour Party can boast three times that number of loyal and active members. Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And on a linked issue, this one is entitled Wrong Lesson. Your correspondent, Karen McCleary, Letters, July the 4th, draws the wrong history lesson. Democracy is not static. The people can change their minds and are entitled to hold their politicians to account. Our current parliament was elected in the 2017 general election when we were asked to give the PM a mandate to implement her vision of Brexit. The people denied her that mandate. Many could already see the Leave campaign's promises could not be delivered. Having campaigned on the promise of the easiest deal in history, a damaging no-deal exit was becoming a clear and present danger. Another promise was the return of sovereignty to our Parliament. Now, a new PM, to be elected by a tiny number of voters, threatens to suspend Parliament in order to impose a no-deal Brexit that the vast majority do not want. We fought Hitler because, having been democratically elected, he then destroyed the German Parliament and held rallies rather than elections. Like the Brexit Party MEPs, his supporters too disrespectfully turned their backs on the opening proceedings of a new parliamentary session. Your correspondent does not have a monopoly on patriotism. I was in Ypres at the Menin Gate on the D-Day anniversary. Nor is she alone in her demand for respect for our democracy. Those wishing to stop Brexit are entitled to their views and free to campaign for what they believe. She should practice what she preaches and respect Councillor Paula Ferguson for her willingness to stand as a parliamentary candidate. Those willing to stand for election and, if elected, devote their lives to the service of their constituents are the ultimate examples of what it means to be a Democrat. This from Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
This letter is headed Emergency. Winchester Green Party applauds the decision of Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council to declare a climate emergency. We hope for swift action on implementation. Please don't wait for the emergence of an action plan or the setting up of a citizens' assembly to get started. Some ideas the councils could consider straight away: move all their investments in fossil fuel companies to renewables. HCC can reverse its veto on wind turbines on the land it owns. Refuse any planning applications for fracking in the licensed locations in Avington and Sparsholt. Lobby government to stop requiring electricity fed into the grid from rooftop solar panels to be donated free of charge to the large suppliers of electricity. Crowdfund solar panels for schools. Only 8 out of the 530 schools that HCC controls currently have them. HCC should stop supporting increases in road capacity and expansion of Southampton Airport. Much more needs to happen, and some of it will be controversial. But above all, our local authorities need to act fast. The emergency is real and has been postponed for too long already. In October, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, reported that global temperatures are moving towards a catastrophic 3 degree C rise during this century. Evelyn and Rob Parker for Winchester Green Party, Backstreet, St Cross.
This letter is entitled Hampshire Day, and it comes from the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. In the coming days, people across the whole of Hampshire have a unique opportunity to celebrate all that is great about our county, with the first ever Hampshire Day taking place on Monday the 15th of July. I'd like to invite all your readers to consider how their communities might wish to join with the rest of the county in marking this new commemorative occasion. On Hampshire Day, we will raise a newly registered Hampshire flag at a ceremony in Winchester, the ancient capital of England, as part of the national campaign to celebrate England's historic counties, their residents, and all their wealth of traditions and cultures. This flag is not owned by one organisation, but signifies Hampshire as a whole and is available to all to fly with pride. Its design includes a Saxon crown and a Tudor rose, which, along with its red and yellow colours, have been associated with the county for centuries. Our county has much to celebrate on Hampshire Day: heritage and a history older than England itself, world-famous historic sites, diverse and vibrant towns and villages, beautiful natural landscapes, and most of all, the people of Hampshire, both past and present. For these reasons, I hope communities across the county will embrace Hampshire Day by holding their own activities and celebrations and take pride in Hampshire and all that it represents. Nigel Atkinson, Esquire, Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Searles House, Gar Street, Winchester.
Returning to climate change issues, this is entitled Why Too Late to Change Centre Plan? Her council having declared a climate change emergency, I question Councillor Lucille Thompson's consistency in stating that it is too late to change plans for the new leisure centre. In 2017, the City Council paid Ove Arup Consultants approximately £25,000 for a very good feasibility report into provision of a heat network in Bar End. Their report's main recommendation was for the network's energy centre to be based in the new leisure centre and to be supplied from a ground source heat pump with boreholes in the grounds. This plant would have no direct carbon emissions. I understand from reliable preliminary inquiries that the former council subsequently selected a carbon-emitting combined heat and power plant for the leisure centre. If so, and if a climate change emergency exists, which it does, why is this too late to change? Emergency action is bound to cost more. As Winston Churchill used to require frequently, action this day. Bob Barnes, Elizabeth Place, Winchester.
This letter is headed Too Young. Can I be the only one among your readers to feel uneasy at the report of the Competition to Teach Junior School Children about forced migration in last week's Hampshire Chronicle? I was under the impression that the politicising of junior school children, with or without parents' consent, was illegal. Professor Melrose states, in recognition of our work to welcome refugees and asylum seekers, the University of Winchester is a passionate advocate for inclusion. That may be all fine and dandy, but it is a bit of a stretch to imagine that the scheme will be capable of open dialogue with children, who are far too young to be able to debate the intricacies of the issue. The provision of a book to go with the lessons is a further indication of brainwashing. Leaving aside the inference that all migration is forced, it seems quite wrong to bring in the controversial issue of immigration into junior schools for the purpose of indoctrination. David Simmons, Sleepersdell Gardens, Winchester.
Mike Pettigrew revisits a 1908 car crash. I've enjoyed your Looking Back feature for many years, being a keen amateur local historian who was born in Winchester. I've found Barry Sherlock's recent contributions of particular interest, and his latest contribution concerning the value of police archives especially caught my eye. I have two photographs featuring the aftermath of the same car crash, believed to be on St Cross Road, near Five Bridges Road. Not surprisingly, the Hampshire Chronicle published a report of this accident on the 13th of June 1908. The paper also published a follow-up report on the 10th of October. The accident did occur at what many of us have always known as Ghost Corner, the St Cross's Road junction with Five Bridges Road. I've also attached scans of the photographs in my personal collection, which were taken by Fred Wright, who published them as a real photographic picture postcard. Fred Wright had a photographic studio in Winchester, in different locations, for a number of years in the first part of the 20th century. Fred was born in Winchester, the son of George Wright the butcher, but a shop in Winchester High Street for several decades, over 100 years ago. Fred lived in the Winchester area all his life, living at South Wanston in his latter years. Fred's photographs are usually of very high quality, but these are of exceptional quality in interest and very rare. There's an AA badge on the front of the car. I just wonder how much help that organisation was able to give in that situation. And what a sad end to Mr. Salter's cart. And possibly the car, of course. Fortunately, there were no reported fatalities. Mike Pettigrew, Ashley Close, Hairstock, Winchester.
And this is entitled Street Barriers. Councillor Gottlieb is quite right about both the likely effectiveness and the ugliness of the planters stroke barriers in the High Street. They could have been done a lot better, but I want to question whether we should have had them at all. It is easy to understand, in the aftermath of a terrorist enormity, the desire to protect population against a future attack. But is this response proportionate, politically appropriate, or even morally justifiable? Proportionate? There have been about 100 deaths from terrorism in Great Britain over the last 18 years. Pro rata for the population of Winchester District, it is equivalent to about one death in 100 years. In Winchester District, more than 50 people die from air pollution in 1 year, a figure largely preventable if local and national government took the trouble to prevent it. There is a discrepancy of proportionality here. Appropriate? A stock response to acts of terror is to assert that we are not afraid. We won't let them change us or what we do. So why, in fact, do we change what we do? Morally justifiable? Fanatical terrorism is, fortunately, frequently intercepted by the intelligence services, but it seems unlikely that it will be otherwise deterred. If an atrocity is intended and undetected, then it will take place somewhere. Are not the barriers in the High Street then simply an attempt to divert the threat to somewhere else and on to other people? The whole population cannot be defended like this. Why should a small part of it be so protected? This from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And this is a lovely one. It's headed Close Beauty. Enjoy the beautifully mown and kept grass in the Cathedral Close, as well as the discreet flower beds while you can. The gardeners are to be congratulated. Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester.
Right, thank you all very much for those. And the next thing we're going to hear about is your say, and parking and penalty charges are under the spotlight this week. Here's what a few members of the public thought. Richard, will you take that one for us?
Yes, and a particular focus is the fact that Hampshire is said to make a profit of nearly £13 million this year out of parking charges and penalties.
Goodness.
Geoffrey Carter Brown, 55, semi-retired electrician of Upham, said, "It's absolutely outrageous. If they want a thriving High Street, it should be cheaper." Malcolm Tiffin, 52, a plumber of Bournemouth Road, Chandler's Ford, said, "I manage to park free when I come to Winchester, but I know the prices put a lot of people off." Richard Payne, 67, a retired nurse of West Totton, said, "If they're funding jollies to foreign countries, then of course I disagree. But no one really knows where it goes." Andy Reid, 29, bookmaker of Abbots Road, Abbots Barton, said, "Well, I suppose the local councils have to be funded somehow. Luckily, I could walk to work every day, so I'm not affected."
Yeah, thank you for that. Do you have any comment to make about that?
Yeah, I agree with Andy Reid. Local authorities have lost so much of their funding from central government, up to 50% in some cases, that they've got to make money somewhere to fund our services. So. Mm. Regrettable, but probably necessary.
I had understood that what they do with excess funds like that is buy property as an asset. But you didn't hear it from me. Anybody else got to say? No? As Richard said it for you. So if you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor, 5 Apple Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. and you could even drop in when you're in Winchester. Moving on to editorial comment now. But the editor this week comments on that Dove Inn issue. The uncertain future of the Dove Inn. The Dove Inn at Mitchell Dever Station is in uncertain times. Its owner, Kim Gottlieb, wishes to sell and convert it into housing, although he says he proposes a new bar, cafe, in the coach house. The City Council, urged on by the Parish Council, has declared the pub an asset of community value and given the local people 6 months to organise a potential purchase of the pub to retain it as a hub. The accepted narrative is that rural pubs are doomed, but the truth is not so negative. There are plenty of pubs in the Winchester area that are thriving after periods of decline and lengthy closures. The Wanston Arms in Wanston, just down the road from the Dove Inn, the Fox and Hounds at Crawley, and the Bugle in Twyford are just three. The Chronicle wishes any campaign to save the pub the best of luck. Pubs are a vital part of British culture, and they still have the potential, with the right landlord or manager, to be a crucial part of local life. But the bottom line now is that if local people in the Mitchell Dever area want to save the Dove Inn, it will be saved. If they don't, well, then it will close. And we're going to have first person now, and that's Ron Allison, this time, contributes a piece about the keys to number 10. So it's over to you, please, Peter.
Thank you, Ros. Are you, I wonder, among the 160,000 or so members of the Conservative and Unionist Party who will be deciding who is to be the next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland? Put like that, it looks like you have considerable responsibility. You are voting on behalf of our whole population, your qualification being that you are a bona fide member of the party. In fact, you will be voting for a new leader of your party, but there is so much more to it than that. The way we do things in this country means that with the party job comes also the small matter of running the country, if your party is in power, of course. It is our form of democracy, a system of government that may seem odd to some, but then so does having a monarchy, and that seems to work well enough. Everything going smoothly depends on the Queen having a Prime Minister who can command a majority in the House of Commons. If that is the case, then he or she can govern effectively, ensuring that the country's finances and defences are in continuously good working order. It is not a job for the easygoing or for one looking for a quiet life, but there is always a good supply of candidates. Your Tory party members, are Mr. Johnson and Mr. Hunt. They and the rest of us await your verdict. Looking back at Prime Ministers during my own years of political awareness, I start with Neville Chamberlain, who apparently I heard telling us on the BBC that we were at war with Germany. It was September the 3rd, 1939, a day which came to have such significance to millions throughout the world. Chamberlain was a Conservative, and soon he was to hand over to Winston Churchill, whose leadership during the war was to make him a hero to youngsters such as myself. Not to the entire country, though, for despite his outstanding contribution to the Allied victory over Germany and Japan, Churchill was defeated in the first election after the war. Labour, led by Clement Attlee, came to office, going on to introduce the welfare state and within it the National Health Service. These were major innovations, greatly due to Attlee. Churchill returned to power for a short time until ill health finally caught up with him. He was succeeded then by Anthony Eden, who had served for many years in Churchill's governments, but was undone in 1956 by the Suez Canal crisis. He was succeeded by Harold Macmillan, who was, in his turn, replaced by perhaps the most unlikely holder of the office, Lord Hume. He was in the House of Lords at the time, but renounced his title, became Sir Alec Douglas Hume, and won a seat in the Commons. It was one of those acts of political manipulation that seem only to occur in Britain. But it didn't really work out, and Labour returned to power under Harold Wilson. After Ted Heath, Wilson returned to later hand over to Jim Callaghan, and then next in the number 10 was a woman. Margaret Thatcher was tough, a pioneer, extremely capable, and very much divided opinions. In terms of impact, she deserves to be ranked extremely highly. She eventually had to give way, but she had broken through a huge barrier, paving the way for Mrs. Theresa May. But between the two women, we have been served by Sir John Major, Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, and David Cameron. All made their own contributions. So now it will be over to... ?
Thank you very much. And next, it's a letter from Westminster, and this time MP George Hollingbury writes on the subject of Brexit. Richard, please.
The traditional political terms left and right wing have been very much misused during these 3 years of Brexit debate. Basically, hard Brexit means right wing and soft Brexit or no Brexit are now sobriquets for those on the left. These linguistic battle lines have been firmly, if inaccurately, drawn, even though it's really no help to the public or fed up and confused in equal measure. The way language has been used has become very interesting. Just lately we've had, brace yourselves, bollocks to Brexit, a Tory Brexit, and two particular favourites of mine, the hardest of hard Brexits and people's vote, as if the referendum that caused all this wasn't one of those. It's all either offensive or nonsense, but I suppose it reads well in newspapers. However, the facts here really are indisputable. Brexit has very little to do with the denomination left or right. If you're sold on the idea that all members of the European Research Group, ERG, who generally want us to leave the EU without or with a deal, are right-wing or even far-right, then you're very much mistaken. All are seriously concerned about the lack of accountability and democracy at the heart of the EU and feel Britain is better off unhindered by a move to a federal union states of Europe. One may agree with that view or not, but it's hardly the stuff of authoritarian hang 'em and flog 'em beliefs. Many of the MPs in the ERG have also been champions for the disadvantaged. Again, hardly reactionary. Similarly, Theresa May's government is constantly called right-wing. I wonder why. This is a government that is only five to meet the United Nations foreign aid target of 0.7% of GDP. The previous Conservative-led government also brought in same-sex marriage. There are plenty of other examples I can give, but I believe the correct term for the May administration is centre-right, although I accept that this is hardly the stuff of headline writers' dreams. And if being a Brexiteer is to be right-wing, then logic dictates that that makes the 17 million who voted for it in the UK right-wingers, including millions of Labour voters. Hardly. And finally, what of Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn? Here's a man who's left-wing down to the soles of his shoes. And his position on Brexit? Well, pretty confused at present, but historically, absolutely not. He voted against the Maastricht Treaty creating the EU and said this of it: it takes us in the opposite direction of an unelected legislative body, the European Commission, and in the case of foreign policy, a policy commission that will in effect be imposing foreign policy on nation states that have fought for their own democratic accountability. Anyone from the ERG would have been proud to have said that. The use of language is always interesting, particularly in politics, but we should not be sucked into the idea that left or right can fit easily into remain or leave like a hand into a glove. If only it was that simple. George Hollingbury, Conservative MP.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Sarah to be made Doctor of Art. A famous actress is among those to have received honorary degrees from a Southampton university. Sarah Parrish, star of ITV drama Broadchurch, who lives near Alresford, was made a Doctor of Arts during Southampton Solent University's graduation week. For several years, she has campaigned to raise money for better childcare provision at Southampton General Hospital. The graduation week took place this week at the O2 Guildhall. Graduates threw hats in the air at the 10 ceremonies that took place from July the 8th until July the 12th. Graduates in subjects ranging from art design and fashion, sport, health and social sciences, media technology, business and law, and maritime science and engineering were in attendance. Vice Chancellor at Solent University, Professor Graham Baldwin, said, "Graduation week is the highlight of our academic year and is a huge event for our students, who have spent the past few years working hard so that they can follow their dreams."
Thank you very much.
Governor meets public. The Governor of the Bank of England met members of the public in Southampton at the first of a series of citizens' panels. The event gave a panel of 20 residents the chance to share their views about the economy with Mark Carney and other bank officials. The first time that the citizens' panel for Central Southern England, made up of more than 20 residents from across the region, had met. The meetings gave the bank senior policymakers the chance to hear views from across the UK. Participants asked questions on a range of issues, from the bank's preparations for Brexit to the prospects for digital currencies and what the bank is doing on climate change. Citizens panel member Owen Thomas of Winchester said, "The event was really worthwhile. The Bank of England staff are genuinely interested in hearing our experiences and the issues we're all facing. Mark Carney treated everyone with respect and answered all our questions in an open, straightforward way. It's easy to become jaded and disillusioned by faceless public officials. However, the event completely dispelled any such feelings about the bank."
And this is just a little short item entitled "Leader Yet to Make His Mark." The new county council chief is yet to make his mark, it seems. On the board of the former and current leaders in the Castle Winchester, that is. The board details key figures at Hampshire County Council dating back to 1889. Councillor Keith Manns took control from Councillor Roy Perry in May, but his name is yet to be painted on the board.
And now we move on to historical items with the usual mini news clips, starting with 200 years ago. 200 years ago, Monday, July the 12th, 1819. First item is, several persons have been brought into Southampton this week to be dipped in the salt water as an antidote for that direful disease, the hydrophobia, having been bitten by dogs, many of which animals are running mad across the country. The second item is, a young man named Torrington did 2 miles under 10 minutes for £10. Considering he'd not been trained, this is one of the greatest things on pedestrian record.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, July the 12th, 1919. First item, the annual sports organised by No. 1 Wireless School, Royal Air Force, Flower Down, Winchester, took place on the recreation ground on Thursday afternoon, in the presence of a large assemblage of people. Not only were various military units well to the fore, but invitations had been numerously issued to and accepted by representative and other civilian friends. A capital programme was energetically carried out, an excellent percentage of the many entries actually competing, and the pleasant weather contributing to the enjoyment. And the second item. From time to time, Huge congregations have assembled at Winchester Cathedral, drawn by some service of a special character, but it is doubtful if, in living memory, so vast a congregation has gathered there as on the afternoon of Sunday last. The day for thanksgiving to Almighty God on the occasion of signing of the Treaty of Peace.
Thanks all very much. And we have reached historical items. That's with the usual mini clips of news, starting with 200 years ago. And I have that one. 200 years ago, on Monday, July the 12th, 1819. Several persons have been brought into Southampton this week to be dipped in the salt water as an antidote for that direful disease, the hydrophobia, having been bitten by dogs, many of which animals are running mad across the country. Second item is, a young man named Torrington did 2 miles under 10 minutes for £10. Considering he'd not been trained, this is one of the greatest things on pedestrian record.
100 years ago, Saturday, July the 12th, 1919. The annual sports organised by No. 1 Wireless School, Royal Air Force, Flowerdown, Winchester, took place on the recreation ground on Thursday afternoon, in the presence of a large assemblage of people. Not only were various military units well to the fore, but invitations had been numerously issued to and accepted by representative and other civilian friends. A capital programme was energetically carried out, an excellent percentage of the many entries actually competing, and the pleasant weather contributing to the enjoyment. And the second item. From time to time, huge congregations have assembled at Winchester Cathedral, drawn by some service of a special character. But it is doubtful if, in living memory, so vast a congregation has gathered there as on the afternoon of Sunday last, on the day for thanksgiving to Almighty God on the occasion of signing of the Treaty of Peace.
Two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, July the 12th, 1969. About 100 young people between the ages of 17 and 23 arrived in Winchester last weekend to take part in the city's first international youth festival of music and drama. They came from Hungary, France, Holland and Germany, and they'll be staying with local families during the next 2 weeks. On Sunday, they were officially welcomed by Mr. Marsh, the County Education Officer, and Miss Roxburgh, the Chairman of the Organising Committee. And on Monday they met the Mayor and other civic dignitaries at a reception in the Guildhall, referring to young people as the real ambassadors between nations of the world. Councillor Spicer told them, "I'm quite certain that young people today, whatever their country of origin, want to freely mix with their counterparts. It's good that this should be so." And secondly, the Abbots Barton housing estate in Winchester has been described as the most shocking piece of development we, the Winchester City Council, have done, and had set house building back in the area by 30 years. These strong words were used at a meeting of the Housing and Health Committee on Tuesday, when rents for the Abbots Barton houses were discussed. Councillor B.J. Hibbard commented, "When I had a look at the layout and types of houses, I was at a loss to find out why they were rated so highly. I ask if we have the right to ask tenants to pay increased rents for them." Alderman Taylor said, "We're put in this position by the government and their restrictions. These houses are not of the standard we would have liked. I think we've gone back 30 years.
25 years ago, Friday, July the 8th, 1994. Temporary planning permission has been granted to reopen the former probation hostel, Carlisle House, as an all-year night shelter for Winchester's homeless, despite police concerns and objections from neighbouring residents. Police Superintendent Giles Stogden told the city's Planning Development Control meeting last Thursday that some chronic alcoholics come to Winchester specifically for the shelter and a lucrative begging pitch. Several of the shelter residents have told our officers this, and we have no reason to disbelieve them, he said. Some of the residents used the shelter on a long-term basis and did not seek alternatives, he continued. This element has aggravated the crime problem within the city centre, particularly begging, theft and drunkenness. This has ramifications for the city which need to be considered. Superintendent Stogden said it was essentially a political decision. I do not propose to comment further other than to say that the policing of the city centre is adversely affected by the additional demands, he said. A police analysis of arrests for minor offences in the city centre between November the 13th, 1993 to May the 18th, 1994 revealed that 36 residents of the shelter were arrested for 83 offences compared with 13 non-residents arrested for similar offences. And the second section. Hundreds of protesters went back to Twyford Down at the weekend to support the largest, and possibly the last, demonstration the ancient hills have ever seen. Some 800 people attended a rally in Plague Pits Valley on Saturday afternoon and took part in a mass trespass on the nearly finished M3 cutting. The 100 police escorting the protesters gave them a free hand to do what they would, and only one person was arrested for criminal damage after he allegedly kicked the side of a car on the bypass. But the focus of attention was not the controversial M3 extension, for gathered behind a "Forgive Us Our Trespass" banner, people were there to demonstrate against the Criminal Justice Bill, which they say will outlaw the right to peaceful protest. Due to become law later this summer, the bill introduces a new offence of aggravated trespass, which will effectively criminalise the activities of road protesters. It also makes it a criminal offence to disobey a police officer and empowers police to obtain an order banning assemblies. Defying the legislation carries a maximum penalty of 3 months imprisonment. Veteran M3 campaigner David Croker sees the legislation as a curtailment of civil liberty. He said, "The right to peaceful protest is held to be sacrosanct in a democracy, yet the Criminal Justice Bill now before Parliament threatens that right."
Thank you all very much for those. And finally, on the subject of nostalgia, but moving into what's on as well, here's this item that will take us back to 1979. Imagination made carnival a success, it says. Villagers take to the streets at the Otterbourne Carnival. The floats were a triumph of imagination and hard work in a village near Winchester, writes Ian Crump. There was a tiny Mary with a live and skittish lamb, and 6-year-old Lisa Cruel rode a white horse as Hiawatha. Miss Otterbourne, 1979, Antoinette Cleall, rode with her two princesses in a Beaufort Phaeton on June the 23rd. The 25th Southampton Boys Brigade Band led the procession, and the Romsey Army Cadet Force Band kept walkers in step on a blazing afternoon. A splash of colour was provided by the first Albrook Brownies as drum majorettes. The villagers are dressed in typical late 1970s fashion, lots of perms, man-made fibres and flared trousers. The carnival gave a break from the stranglehold of traffic. The main road was far busier before the Chandlersford bypass was upgraded to M3. So that really does take us into what's on now. And I'm going to start with an item in the Hampshire Chronicle, which is about lunchtime concerts in the cathedral. On Tuesday the 16th, Lunchtime recital, Winchester Cathedral. 1 p.m, the Ruskin Trio. And these recitals are free to attend. A retiring collection is taken to help defray costs. And now Claire is going to read you an item. I can't remember what you've got there, Claire, so perhaps you'd tell us.
I have history to be reenacted at Cheriton.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
People will be able to experience the sights and sounds of Towton, Cheriton, Gettysburg and Waterloo being brought to life at Scrubs Farm in Bishop Sutton near Alresford. Set in the Hampshire countryside, this multi-period recreation of history through the ages will take you on a journey, tracking the development of the foot soldier from the man at arms and knights of the medieval period through to the dawning of the age of mass firepower in the English Civil Wars. Then it's on to the red-coated ranks of the Napoleonic Wars and arguably the dawn of industrial warfare in the American Civil War. The Sealed Knot, the Battle of Cheriton Project Limited and the Royal British Legion have partnered to put on the event. There is non-stop entertainment throughout the day, with a highlight being a reenactment of the Battle of Cheriton at 1 p.m. by hundreds of English Civil War soldiers from the Sealed Knot. Not only is it the 375th anniversary of the Battle of Cheriton, but what makes this commemoration and reenactment particularly special is that it will take place on part of the original battlefield. Event opens 10:30 a.m. each day. Entry adults £7, children £5, family ticket £20. www.battleofcheriton.co.uk.
Thank you very much. And on to yours, please, Richard.
Yes, this is about the Welsh National Opera returning to the Theatre Royal Winchester with Don Pasquale. It's set in and around Pasquale's Doner Kebab van. It tells the story of an old bachelor's romantic delusions and the young lovers who try to outwit him. It includes a larger-than-life characters, including his young nephew, Ernesto, his girlfriend, Norina, and local geezer, Malatesta, and his travelling band, who hang around after long boozy nights out. Pasquale wants to find a wife and produce a son who'll become heir to his kebab empire, but Ernesto and Norina have other plans. Performed by the world-renowned Welsh National Opera, this clever reworking of composer Donizetti's classic opera with a brand-new libretto written by Daisy Evans has a contemporary setting in downtown present-day Cardiff to appeal to... fresh new audience, as well as those who already love and know the work. So nothing been quite like it seen before. So it'll be at the Theatre Royal Winchester on July the 13th. Only, I think. At 7:30. So, anyway, to find out more, go onto the Winchester Theatre Royal website or call 01962 840 440 01962 840 440.
There is still time. Thank you very much. Yours now, Peter.
Thank you, Ros. This one is entitled Stage Tribute to Kemp. The true life story of Shakespeare's clown and his Morris dance from London to Norwich is heading to Winchester in July. In Chris Harris's play, Steve Taylor portrays Shakespearean jester Will Kemp, who in 1600, after leaving William's stage company, the Lord Chamberlain's men, Morris danced from London to Norwich. The 9 days wonder finished in St John's Alley, and there is a plaque in tribute to Kemp at Norwich's Madam Market Theatre. This show has taken place at Madam Market Theatre and in London's Tara Theatre this year, and plays Edinburgh Festival Fringe in August. Blue Fire Theatre Company said, Kemp's jig makes Shakespeare accessible by sending him up. His supposed lack of a sense of humour is a running joke throughout the play, and also gives an insight into the unglamorous side of life in Tudor England, using aspects of commedia dell'arte, music hall review, and stand-up comedy to illustrate Kemp's adventures. Andrew Lawston waxed lyrical about the piece, saying, "A thoroughly irreverent and entertaining look at England's theatrical and social history." The 403rd anniversary of the birth and death of legendary wordsmith William Shakespeare was on April the 23rd. Before the 125-mile trek, Kemp's stage credits included A Midsummer Night's Dream, Romeo and Juliet, and Much Ado About Nothing. The colourful character, who was one of the earliest celebrity clowns, has been represented on screen in Doctor Who, Shakespeare in Love, and the BBC situation comedy Upstart Cow. Kemp's jig will hit the stage at the Chesil Theatre Winchester on July the 26th. Tickets can be purchased online using the website www.chesiltheatre.org.uk or by calling 01962 867 086.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Going to give you the lighting up times now. Starting on Saturday, the 13th of July, the sun will set at 9:16 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 17th of July, the sun will rise at 5:10 and will set at 9:12 p.m. And we're moving on now to the items of general news. Claire, can we have your first article, please?
Artists Cooperative marks 25th anniversary in the city. An extraordinarily creative evening celebrating 25 years of the Colour Factory Artists Studios and raising money for Neiman Pick charity. The Colour Factory were thrilled with the numbers who attended, and the whole atmosphere on the night was totally inspiring. Mayor Eleanor Bell came as well as over 140 guests from Winchester and the surrounding counties enjoyed this first ever live art event in Winchester. In an exciting and unique evening at the Colour Factory, artists were set up with easels, canvases and a whole variety of art materials. The live art challenge consisted of two rounds with six budding artists, followed by six professional artists painting under the trees and in the garden in 30-minute timed slots. It was a thrill for everyone to see artworks appear from blank canvases, revealing lots of different art techniques on all sorts of themes by both students and professional artists. Says Rosie Palmley, "We were especially proud of the budding artists from our classes and workshops who took part demonstrating how the Colour Factory bring on artists to reach such high standards, encouraging and inspiring through creativity." At the end of the evening, the live art paintings were put into a silent auction and went to the highest bidders. The Colour Factory artists donated their own original artwork. Some, says artist and founder Jenny Muncaster, "The celebration displayed the Colour Factory's love and passion for art and how creativity can lift us all. We are thrilled to say that the evening raised an incredible sum of £2,210, with the total amount donated all going to Neiman Pick UK. The Colour Factory is now a well-established creative hub in Winchester City. It is an idyllic spot for creativity, consisting of studios, a gallery and a classroom workshop in their beautiful beach-themed garden. The Colour Factory artists are famous locally for their beautiful collection of painted bollards in Winchester's Square, which have become world-renowned. The team includes professional artists and makers, Jenny Muncaster, Rachel Alexander, Rosie Palmley, Michael Weller, Jessica Kidby and Carol Wade. At the end of the evening, the live art paintings were put into a silent auction and went to the highest bidders. The Colour Factory artists donated their own original paintings, jewellery and a voucher for a silversmithing workshop at the Colour Factory. About the charity. NPUK www.npuk.org. NPUK support families and research the Niemann-Pick disease. Niemann-Pick diseases are a group of rare and devastating inherited lysosomal storage disorders that can affect both children and adults. I apologise if I haven't pronounced that correctly.
Well done, Claire. There's some quite difficult things said in there, that's it. Thank you very much indeed.
Greens call for the M3 plan to be scrapped. Winchester Green campaigners are pressing the government to abandon its plans for a £100 million scheme at Junction 9 of the M3. Extinction Rebellion, Friends of the Earth and Winchester Action on Climate Change call on Highways England to think again and abandon the scheme. In a statement they say, it's perverse to spend £100 million or more on making our lives worse, arguing the work to alter the interchange will do little to improve congestion or pollution. The proposal is to rebuild the junction to remove the congestion point of the traffic lights on the roundabout where the M3, A34 and A272 meet. The campaigners say the scheme will do nothing to tackle the climate emergency, with 60% of the city's greenhouse gas coming from traffic. They point out that even if road transport goes electric, the scheme will still be detrimental. Enabling growth in private car use and road freight will encourage extravagant use of clean energy that will be in short supply. Worse, if the demand is higher than the clean energy supply available, transport will use dirty energy. Instead, they call for a network of fast Winchester District bus routes to encourage people to leave cars at home, a network of bus feeder services at Southampton Airport Station to connect to Winchester and Basingstoke, a railway station at North Whiteley, a district-wide safe cycle network, and increasing the capacity of the railway line through Winchester.
And this is entitled, excuse me, Outcry at Store Division Plans. Plans to divide a Winchester DIY store into four separate units have been faced with nearly 70 objections by local residents. Royal London, the landlord of Homebase in Eastern Lane, submitted an application to the City Council last month, sparking a campaign with 67 formal objections and an online petition through Facebook. But the landlord has denied that plans would take immediate effect and that Royal London is only looking to keep its options open for the future. The company said the changes will only take effect if Homebase choose not to renew the lease or the store becomes vacant in the future, and that the campaign has formed following a few mistruths circulating around social media. Michael Lawrence, head of retail for Royal London, said, "The retail market has evolved significantly in recent years, and this has resulted in the failure of some tenants. Safeguarding and protecting the long-term future of our assets is an important part of our business. In Winchester, as we are across the country, we are looking at our assets to ensure that our pension policyholders, whose money we are investing, are protected in the event of tenant defaults." He added, "While there are no immediate plans for Homebase to vacate the site, we are simply keeping our options open for its future." However, Kyle Forbes, the Winchester store manager, told the Chronicle he was concerned the application is putting 34 jobs at risk, some of which have been held for more than 20 years. He said, "The store has been located in Winnell for around 25 years. We are fully committed to its future. Our customers will be hugely inconvenienced and disappointed to lose their Winchester Homebase store. We have been overwhelmed with a positive response from our customers who do not want to lose their local home base.
Memorial work. Repairs to the war memorial in Stockbridge are set to be made soon. The parish council has announced it has received planning permission for the work to make safe the memorial near the White Hart pub. The project will now go to the next stage of contracting a structural engineer to oversee the work and will go out to tender for the improvements.
That fair attracts tens of thousands. Tens of thousands of spectators filled the streets and green spaces of Winchester last weekend as the UK's longest running outdoor arts festival celebrated its 45th year. Hat Fair 2019 saw performers from across the world line the city with dancing, music, theatre acts and circus tricks. The festival sparked life on Friday lunchtime with a carnival, seeing hundreds of local school children dressed in colourful costumes parading from the Great Hall to Abbey Gardens. Street performances spanned across the rest of the day and Saturday, and on Sunday the festival moved to North Wall's recreation ground for a more relaxed day.
And this is entitled Surgery Progress. Progress is being made on the new doctor's surgery in Winchester City Centre, a meeting was told. St Clement's surgery is due to relocate from Tanner Street to a new building on the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street. But the move has been beset by delays, with the doctors concerned about some of the terms and conditions. The issue was raised by a question from Councillor Steve Miller at Council. Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "Negotiations with the practice are progressing, and it is anticipated that these could be concluded during the course of the next month. A report will be prepared setting out the provisionally agreed terms and setting out the mechanism for proceeding with the project." St Clement's has around 17,500 patients on its books. The present base on Tanner Street, built in the 1970s, is owned by Lib Dem City Councillor Kim Gottlieb.
And I'm afraid that's all we have from you with our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week. But before we go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. And I'll give you her number again. It's 01962 711998. And we'd like to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye-bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And Peter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time. Goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Until the next time, goodbye and enjoy the lovely weather. Bye-bye.